Let's get my orange out of my pocket. That comes back later. Okay, let's go back to the Colossians. Mike, can I have that Colossians passage back on? Fruitfulness on our front line. Do you want to bring the passage up, Mike? Now, you may wonder what this amazing Colossians passage has to do with fruitfulness on our front line. Six verses in Colossians that encapsulate the entirety of what Jesus is about. If you ever wonder, well, what's Jesus about? What's the purpose? If you ever get asked the question, come back to these verses, because in these six verses, it would tell you everything. Absolutely everything. So we start in verse 15. And what happens in this passage before we start is that it splits into two. 15 to 17 works one way, and 18 to 20 works a different. And let's get there. So verse 15 is the image of the invisible God. That doesn't mean he's an image. It doesn't mean he's an image. He's not a picture of the invisible God. He's the reality. He is the person of the invisible God. So Jesus is a real person, and he reflects the reality of God. And he's the firstborn over all creation. He was there right at the start. Everything comes from Jesus. Jesus wasn't some vague idea that got thrown in later in the piece. He was there at the outset. There was no creation before Jesus, because Jesus started the process. Mike. All things were created, everything, in heaven and earth, visible and invisible. Jesus didn't go about, I'll create people, I'll create animals, I'll create mountains, I'll create whatever. He's responsible for every single thing that is created. So when we think about, is Jesus interested in what I do? The reality is that all that you do, all that you touch, all that you breathe, has the DNA of Jesus in it. Sometimes we think of Jesus and we think, look, Jesus would be really interested if I'm doing work for charity, but he's not really interested if I'm doing work for Marks and Spencers, or if I'm in the city, or if I'm a carpenter, or if I'm retired, or if I'm just making my garden look beautiful. Because Jesus is fundamentally interested in each one of those things. We get into that trap sometimes of thinking, look, there's my life and there's my church life. I'll live my life this way, and then on Sunday and on sometimes when I'm with my church mates, I live slightly differently, because that's what we're called to do. No, we're not. Jesus is it all. Mike, do you want to bring up the next verse? And whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, everything's created by him. So you have this first half of this amazing passage, which effectively states the reality of Christ. There at the start, there at the finish, created all things. And there is nothing that is out of his scope of interest. Do you want to move on, Mac? The reality that Jesus holds all things together. Sometimes you think, oh, how did that happen? Sometimes you think, well, that's just a coincidence. Sometimes you think, how did I find myself in this place? How did I find myself doing this? How did I find myself married to Joe and having these three kids? Is that just chance? But the reality is that everything about me, the physical me, and everything about our family, and everything about this family, is held together by Christ. Mike, do you want to move on? Now we talk about, okay, that establishes some credentials as far as Jesus is. So if we've got any doubts, that's who he is, where he started, and where he is right now. And this talks about the reality of Christ now. He is the head of the church, of the body. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead. He was the first and will always be the first to defeat death, which gives us amazing hope. And he did that so that in all things we can look to him. He didn't do it as a magic trick. He didn't do it just to impress us like we do sometimes. We do things to impress our friends and neighbors and whatever else. Let's be honest. He didn't do any of those things. He did this so that we could focus and recognize that he is at the center of all things. Mike. For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him. In the reality of Jesus, Jesus isn't a man-shaped, slightly inferior version of God. Jesus is the reality of God, the fullness of God. God, the creator of all things, is in man. And God's pleased that that man had the totality of himself within him. Mike? And what's the purpose? That through Jesus, he can reconcile everything to himself. Whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. Bit of a mouthful. But the purpose of Christ is to bring us back to the relationship that as it was meant to be. The very purpose of Christ. Christ isn't here just to be a role model. Christ is here to bring us home. And he establishes and he enables us to be brought home through his blood on the cross. Because that was his very purpose. Now what's that? Sorry, Mike, do you want to just flip that off now? So you ask yourself the question, well, okay, that's great. It's an astonishingly powerful passage. It's a great piece of writing. It's a great truth and a great reality. But what on earth does that have to do with fruitfulness on the front line? I think the reality of that for me is that fruitfulness on the front line is a recognition that we're not members of a club. We haven't been the lucky winners of the golden ticket. Because the reality is that not only have we been given a golden ticket, but we've got an unlimited supply of golden tickets to give other people. The reality of our relationship with Christ is that it's an active relationship and not a passive relationship. That promise, that hope, isn't given to you so that it's yours in secret isolation. It's given for you so that you can share it. Mike, do you want to put that slide up while I'm just talking, please? The PowerPoint. And if you've got any doubts about whether that's a truth, whether your membership of Christ's family obliges you to do something else, then just look in the Bible. Because in the Bible there are countless calls for action. I'm not going to read this lot out, but Mike's just going to reveal them as I talk. Almost fell over my legs. I think he's going to reveal them as we talk. Throughout the New Testament, there are countless references requiring us to act. And it's too small to read, I get this, but you'll see why in a minute, because there are just so many of them. This isn't the church saying to you, the Anglican church or any other church saying to you, there's an obligation to act. This is the New Testament telling you, this is Christ telling you that this is the deal. The deal is this, Matthew 28:19-20, therefore go and make disciples of all nations. Romans 10:13-14, and how can they believe in the one of whom they have not heard? And how can they hear without someone telling them? And the someone telling them is you. So we have this amazing God that has this real interest in the intimacy of your life. He has a real interest in the reality of Gilliam, who has a desire to see Gilliam, for us to see Gilliam and convert Gilliam into that which we saw earlier, and we have an obligation to act. We don't have an obligation just to read. We don't have an obligation just to meet here. This isn't being a Christian. This is part of the action. We have an obligation to act. And what's fruitfulness? Let's get back to our fruit. Thanks for that, Mike. The amazing thing about fruit is that none of us could make this. You know, we could plant a tree, we could plant a seed, we could eat this and plant a seed. What does the process look like? You plant a seed, you water, you make sure the soil's good, it grows, you weed, you care, you nurture, you fight off insects that are trying to eat it. You might spend years nurturing a tree before you get an orange, which is a fraction of the size of this, and it'd be smaller and shriveled. But you carry on nurturing and loving, and over a period of time, one of these appears. So you have one tree with some oranges on it. But how do you get an orange grove? How do you turn a single field with an apple tree into an orchard? And the answer is, you work at it. And if when you plant the seed, you step back and you look and you say, but there's no apples, there's no oranges yet. Should we really be surprised? Because it takes all those things, it takes time. And time is something which we've got an eternity of. Thanks for that promise. You know, we get so hooked up on, are there new Christians? Have new people come to Christ? You know, these people made a commitment. All those things are great. And we forget sometimes that it's a process of work. We're to till the ground. We're to fight off the infestations. We're to water. We're to care. And then when these things start to appear, we're to protect them. But the one thing that came through that fruit, one thing that's amazing about fruit is that it starts with a barren seed in barren ground. And ends up, if you bite into any of this stuff, and any of those guys are up there doing the fruit challenge, if you bite into fruit, how on earth did it become that from a barren seed in barren ground? And that's the reality of our calling. That's the reality of the thing that Christ wants us to do. That's the reality of fruitfulness of the front line. Our front line is our orchard, is our apple tree, is our field that's a wasteland that we're called to convert. This bit is what God does. This bit is the promise that comes through that verse. Now you may say, well, look, I'm not an evangelist. I'm not a digger. I'm not a weeder. I'm not very good in the garden. But it's a lie. Because actually, if you look at the variety of fruit and the way it's grown, you pick up a grape, it's grown in a completely different way to an orange, which is grown a completely different way to an apple, to a date, you name it, it goes on. On your front line, there is fruit being produced. It's all at different stages. And your obligation, through your faith and through your love of Jesus and his love of you, is to act. And that's it. And our series, Fruitfulness on the Frontline, will start to explore and give you tools as to how you can work. That's the whole idea of this next 6 sessions. There's a 7th one at the end which will draw it all together. But if you're worried and you think, well, I can't grow this, I've got a clue where to start. I'm embarrassed when I look at my frontline, my non-Christian friends, and I don't know how to explain my faith. I don't know how to say this at school. I don't know how to stand up when something wrong is going on. And by me standing up, I'm going to stand out. Well, these next 6 weeks and this series is all about that. It's about equipping so that we can get fruit. Now what we're going to do is we're going to play some music. And Joe and I will stand at the front whilst this music's going on with some bowls of grapes. Now if you're into this, if you're up for the fact that this is a new season where we're going to move and work on our front line, where we're going to strive to nurture fruitfulness, then just come forward while the music's on and grab a grape. And just think as you bite into the grape what it starts with. It starts like us, fallen and broken people. It starts like us, a barren seed, something that looks completely unpromising. The first 30-odd years of my life, without a relationship with Christ and in all sorts of trouble. That's how this fruit starts. That's how this grape starts. And it finishes luscious, good for you, and tasty. So if you're up for it, if you're up just to commit now to yourself and to those witnessing around you, that over the course of this next 6 weeks, you're willing to explore how you can stand out, how you can take that one step further, just come and grab a grape. Amen.